It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Wednesday morning, October 12th. I'm Steve Cole. It is budget season at Carbondale Town Hall. News Director Gavin Dahl reports.
Last night, for the first time, Carbondale Town Trustees saw the total proposed budget for 2017. The state requires budgets to be proposed by October 15th and adopted by December 15th. Finance Director Renee Gustine and Town Manager Jay Harrington predict overall revenue to be down about 7% by conservative estimates. The slump in oil and gas revenue at the county level is the single biggest factor. While property and sales tax revenues are expected to increase, retail marijuana tax revenue may not. Finance Director Renee Gustine presented highlights of all 19 different fund categories and explained the process.
Jay and I sit down with the departments and begin to review their budgets and try to keep them in line with what we project revenues to be. We had a meeting in August where we all sat down and looked at what we were projecting the revenues to be based on where we were at that time for the rest of the year, so we could see what we thought we would do next year.
After Augustine's presentation, trustees looked in more detail at the utilities and police department budgets. Up next will be the Recreation Department and Public Works on October 18th. Capital projects will be reviewed October 25th. Then November 15th, the trustees will focus on community requests with further meetings to follow as needed. The final public meeting on the 2017 budget is scheduled for December 13th. Carbondale's draft 2017 budget is now available on the town website, carbondalegov.org, or you can pick up a physical copy at Town Hall. For KDNK, I'm Gavin Dahl.
Environmentalists say four bills in front of Congress could have negative effects on public lands. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh spoke with Randy Spivak, Public Lands Program Director for the Center for Biological Diversity, about the bills and their implications. Spivak begins by describing three bills scheduled for a hearing in the Natural Resources Committee.
There are three bills in the Senate. They're all slightly different, but the net effect is the same. The bills are introduced by Senator Murkowski, Alaska, Senator Flake, Arizona, and Senator Lee in Utah. And each of the bills take aim at the Antiquities Act, which is the act passed by Teddy Roosevelt in 1906, which authorized the president to protect and create national monuments to protect objects of historic and scientific interest. And I think folks know many of these national monuments have in fact become our national parks, like Arches and the Grand Canyon. So Murkowski's bill would change the requirement that the presidents cannot act in their discretion, but Congress has to authorize national monuments. Jeff Flake's bill would limit federal reserved water rights. And Lee's bill would basically, for any monument in Utah, say that Congress has to authorize it. So whichever flavor of these bills you pick, their goal is basically to take away the president's power to designate national monuments. We have to remember, Congress approved giving the president this power. And the reason this came about back over a century ago is because of the tremendous amount of looting and degradation to Native American sacred sites, archaeological sites. And Congress recognized that they needed to be protected on public land. And any other object of scientific interest, so that's ecological and biological. The fourth bill is a House bill, and that is by Rob Bishop, Congressman and Chair of Natural Resources Committee in the House, so he's got jurisdiction over public lands. And his bill, which has been years in the making, essentially would seize 30 million acres of America's public lands in Utah and give it to the states for privatization and industrialization for oil and gas drilling.
Does Bishop's bill include national parks?
No, it's not national parks. Bishop was smart enough to realize that that would be a no-go, but it does include BLM lands that are nonetheless important ecologically and beautiful.
Probably lands right outside Canyonlands and Arches.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right outside the boundaries. Which one of these bills do you think has the broadest implications?
Well, one, let me just say that I don't think any of these bills are going to pass because the public clearly supports national monuments and our parks. I do not believe President Obama would sign any of these bills into law. Almost the most worrisome is the Bishop bill, because what Bishop's bill does is it sets aside some areas for wilderness, so it's a gain in the wilderness column, but it also gives wholesale lands to the states for extraction. And that quid pro quo of we'll upgrade some lands to wilderness protection, but we're going to give all these lands over to the oil and gas industry is an insidious deal that should never see the light of day. These are America's public lands. They are shared by all of us. And any attempt to undermine them, weaken the environmental laws, turn them over to local control or states only leads to one thing, less protection and extraction. And America, poll after poll, has demonstrated that we love our public lands for all the benefits they provide for wildlife, for recreation, for hiking, for water. And people do not want to see them turned over for industrialization and privatization.
You know, Randy Spivak, you say that you doubt that any of these bills will be made into law. However, it seems to me that the dialogue about giving federal lands to the states is getting louder.
I don't know that it's getting louder. In fact, I think what we're seeing is a lot of the state bills to advance land seizure, in other words, bills introduced in various states to study or simply seize federal lands, they're all failing. I think the latest stats are 15 out of 16 have failed. And so I think over this past couple of years, yes, the Sagebrush Rebellion, the land seizure movement has gotten louder. We saw that, kind of typified with Malheur National Wildlife Refuge taken over by paramilitary interests. The good news is, though, those voices seem to be getting squashed. At least half of the Bundy clan and wildlife seizure proponents now having admitted guilt to federal conspiracy. The remaining defendants are going to be on trial or currently on trial. And so what we're seeing like dominoes is this dream of these states looking to seize federal lands kind of going up in smoke. States are waking up to recognize that they don't have the constitutional right to do so, that it's tremendously expensive to manage these lands, and the public is opposed.
It would be incredibly expensive for states to manage all of that land, taking into consideration what the federal land management agencies do, the Forest Service or the BLM. And people may not agree with how those agencies manage the land, but man, they sure do cover a lot of things. Everything from wild horse management to, you know, timber sales. I'm talking about both BLM and the Forest Service. And I can't see any one state being able to afford to manage all of that.
That's right. And you hit on a very good point because, you know, what are you managing for, right? State trust lands, for example, many of them are set up to generate revenues and for profit. And so if it's timber, you know, it's short rotation forestry and it's generating a profit. That's not what the America's public lands are for. It's not what our national forests are for, our wildlife refuges, or the high deserts and grasslands of the BLM. So they are managed for multiple use. And if the states were to come into ownership of these lands, then yes, they would be squeezed to turn a profit. And the way to do that is through extraction and throwing overboard all the other values that America loves about our public lands. So there's no way they can cover those costs.
Thank you very much, Randy Spivak. I appreciate it. And thanks for your work.
Well, thank you for reaching out. Really appreciate it. Good to talk to you today.
That was Randy Spivak of the Center for Biological Diversity talking with KDNK's Amy Haddon Barsh. State gasoline prices are lower than they were this time last year. KDNK's Amy Haddon Barsh has more on whether they'll stay that way.
Gasoline prices continued to rise across the U.S. last week, says Gas Buddy, due to Hurricane Matthew in the southeast and amid signals that OPEC could cut crude oil production next month, but expect prices to be shaky until that decision is reached. The national average price for gasoline rose a little over 3 cents to $2.26 per gallon, but some states, led by Georgia, saw average price declines. According to media reports, a barrel of crude oil topped off at $52.41 Tuesday, down almost $2 from Monday. In Colorado, average retail gas prices have gone up slightly to $2.15 per gallon, still 10 cents lower than the national average and 20 cents lower than this time in the state last year. Pitkin County continues to show the state's highest price at $3.29 per gallon. Average prices in Garfield County are about 80 cents lower at $2.45 per gallon. You'd have to drive all the way to Park County to find the state's lowest prices at $2.07 a gallon. The cheapest gas in the country is in Texas at $2 per gallon. And the national average price of a gallon of diesel fuel is $2.40. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Support for KDNK and Morning Edition comes from the Noon Law Firm in the Tamarack Building in Glenwood Springs at 1001 Grand Avenue, providing legal advice and representation concerning water rights, land use, real estate, and business transactions. 945-4500. Kids First in the city of Aspen provide a financial aid program to help defray child care costs for working families. The deadline for new applications is coming up November 1st, with assistance to begin December 1st. Applications are available at Pitkin County Licensed Child Care Programs, Kids First, or at kidsfirst.aspenpitkin.com. For more information, contact Kids First at 970-920-5769. The Twin Lakes Reservoir and Canal Company has scheduled work at the Lost Man Reservoir Dam in Pitkin County, and the reservoir will be drained over the course of several days starting this Friday. The public will still have access to the trails, but not the dam.